More than half of advisors have looked at the door. Roughly 1 in 4 walked through it. Today is about everybody standing in that gap and what's actually keeping them there. It isn't the paperwork. Quick note before we get into it, Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. If you've been turning independence over for a couple of years and you're still where you were, this one's for you. We'll take the barriers in order, the logistics that turn out to be solvable, the money that turns out to be measurable, and the two underneath that nobody names out loud. Start with the number because it frames the rest. Fidelity's advisor movement study found that more than half of advisors, 56%, considered switching firms within a 5-year window. Roughly 1 in 4 actually moved. That data is from 2023, so treat it as a snapshot rather than this year's reading. But look at the shape of it. Most of the industry has thought about this. A fraction of them did anything about it. If the obstacle were mechanical, that gap would be narrow. Mechanical problems get solved by vendors, and the vendor ecosystem for advisor transitions is enormous. Something else is doing the work. And it isn't that moving is rare. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. Thousands of people run this play every year. So let's take the logistics objections seriously and then set them down. The move is too complicated. There's an entire industry of transition consultants and custodians whose whole job is running that playbook for you. I'd have to rebuild the technology. The independent tech stack is mature and somebody else maintains it. I can't run compliance on my own. You wouldn't be. Outsourced compliance officers and platform models exist precisely so that owning your firm doesn't mean becoming your own regulator. Even the legal mechanics are more mapped than advisors assume. If your situation touches a contract, a deferred comp schedule, a note, a non-solicit, that's a job for a securities attorney who handles advisor transitions. Most advisors don't have one on call, which is exactly the point. Get one in your corner before you act, not after. So here's the test. If logistics were genuinely the thing in the way, far more advisors would have moved by now. They haven't. The next barrier is real, and it's the money. Golden handcuffs, deferred compensation that vests over years, retention bonuses, unvested equity, forgivable notes from a recruiting deal. Resign and the unvested piece is typically forfeited, and an unforgiven note balance can be clawed back. FINRA itself has described recruitment incentives running as much as 2 to 3 times the prior year's commissions and fees, and its guidance walks through an illustrative 9-year note. 9 years during which leaving carries a defined cost. But notice the word measurable. The full statement balance is not the number at risk. The unvested slice is, and it shrinks on a schedule you can read. Advisors who actually sit down with their award agreements often find the walkaway figure is smaller than the one they've been carrying around in their head. Handcuffs are either a wall or a number. Do the math and they're a number, and then you get to decide whether it's worth paying. Now, the fear that deserves the most respect, and it gets no statistic from me. Will the clients come? Retention through any transition is never certain. Every book is different, and I won't pretend otherwise. What I'll say in general terms is that strong relationships tend to be loyal to the person who's been doing the work rather than the logo on the statement. The way out of the fear is to read your own book. revenue mix, who hired whom. That's how a fear becomes an estimate. Then watch what happens. Advisors who trust their client relationships completely, who can name the estates they helped sort out after a parent died, still hesitate. When the evidence in your own book is strong and the fear doesn't shrink, the client question is standing in for a different question, one about you. Somewhere along the way, a lot of advisors absorb the belief that the firm is doing more of the work than they are. The brand opens the doors. The platform keeps the clients. On your own, you'd be a solo practitioner with a cell phone and a prayer. Years inside a large firm reinforce that because everything you accomplish there happens under the firm's letterhead, which makes it hard to see where their contribution ends and yours begins. It usually isn't true. The clients call you. They ask for you by name. But a belief outweighs a fact it contradicts. And this belief is heavier than every logistical item I just listed. There's a simple exercise that gets underneath it. List the reasons your clients actually stay, one per line. Then read it back and count how many entries name the firm and how many name you. For most established advisors, the list is full of their own name, the planning work, the call returned on the day the market dropped and somebody panicked. If that's your list, you've located your own answer. And if it genuinely leans on the firm's research and lending, that's worth knowing too, because then staying may be the right call for a good reason instead of a fearful one, which leaves the last barrier. And nobody hands this one out. Permission. Permission to want ownership. To build something that belongs to you instead of renting a seat inside something that belongs to shareholders. To be tired of fighting your own firm over pricing and account minimums, and to conclude that the friction is a model problem rather than a personal failing. Most of the real reasons advisors stay live down here underneath the spreadsheet-shaped objections, which is why solving the spreadsheet never settles it. And the advisors who finally cross from considering to moving almost never discover a fact the rest of us lack. What changes is how they see themselves. They stop asking whether they can pull it off and start asking what they want the rest of this to look like. One more point before I wrap up. You don't have to leave, and that was never the argument. Staying has a real case. The brand, a platform that's already built. No operational drag. The problem is that staying usually gets chosen by default. One more year and then another one. A decision this size deserves to be made on purpose in either direction. I put together a one-page barrier checklist for this, the four things that actually hold advisors in place and how to test each one against your own situation. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. While you're there, the six-question assessment sorts out which barrier is really yours. Name the thing correctly and it loses most of its grip. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.